Welcome to the Pet Loss Companion. I'm Ken Dolan Del Vecchio. I'm here with my friend and co-author, Nancy Saxton Lopez. And this is a program that we do live on Facebook and YouTube every week, Thursday, 6 p.m. Eastern time to about 6:30. And it is a way to expand the reach of our book that's called The Pet Loss Companion, Healing Advice from Family Therapists Who Lead Pet Loss Groups. It's a way for us to dialogue with you, members of the audience. And a lot of what we do during the time that we are together is we read stories that have been sent to us, and then we give some comments on them. You can reach us as follows. You can reach me at kenddv@gmail.com and Nancy at nsaxtonlopez@csmpc.com. Again, that's nsaxtonlopez@csmpc.com. And if you write to us with your story, your animal companion story, please let us know if it's okay to share on the broadcast and on our Substack. And if it's not okay to share, if it's okay to share parts of it, but not others, that's fine as well. If you don't want us to share it at all, we will write back to you. In any case, one or both of us will write back to you. And you can also recommend a guest.
Yes.
You can recommend a topic. We're open to suggestion. You can support our program in a number of ways. The newest way is to join our Substack as a subscriber. And Substack is a place where we post the correspondence that we have with audience members along with their photos. And sometimes the correspondence is a lot more substantial
than what we read, right?
What we read, because we're also sometimes going back and forth a couple of times. And you're reading what we, you can read what we wrote to them, not just what they wrote to us, which was what we share in the program. You can also, and if you do join the Substack as a subscriber, there's a fee of $5 a month. And so it's kind of like an added service, given that we're doing the podcast, we're for free and happy to do so. You can support our work in other ways, like giving a donation on Venmo or PayPal or a monthly subscription on Spotify. All of this is in the program description. This program is a friend of Dakin Humane Society in Springfield, Mass. For more on Dakin, see the program description, dakinhumane.org. One of the programs that Dakin supports is a monthly pet loss support group that I facilitate. It is on the second Tuesday of the month from 6 p.m. to 7:30 Eastern time. It is cost free. And if you're interested in joining that, please click the link on the RSVP to the RSVP page that's in our description. I'll tell you that the groups are tend to be very well attended, and people come from all over the United States and all over the world. And it's a very interesting sharing of perspectives that you get from all the different regional ways of thinking about loss and dealing with loss. The next one is next week. It's May 14th. And again, 6 p.m. to 7:30 Eastern time. Please consider subscribing on YouTube if you haven't already. We would like you to know that we have just passed 1,000 subscribers, and we're so grateful to all of you who have subscribed. This is really a way to raise the visibility of the program and at some point maybe get some revenue backing for the program through ads. That won't come for a while, I guess. But it also, the more people subscribe, the higher the program comes up on lists where people are looking for pet loss support. So it really helps with visibility and accessibility. And then finally, we'd like you to know that we have an affiliation with a company called Bereave that creates these very nicely crafted granite memorial plaques. And as you can see in this image, you can put it in a memorial garden or a gravesite, or you might just put it inside in a place where you would keep other mementos from your beloved pet's life. And Nancy has
Here's Bailey.
We asked them to give us one to make sure that it was substantial. And it is. It's a really
nice. Oh, it's beautiful. And it's really heavy.
And if you buy one of these, then you're giving us a little bit of support as well from the Bereave Company. And Nancy, do you want to get us started?
Yeah, we have two stories tonight. As you all know, that they're very heartbreaking and heartwarming at the same time because of our relationships that we have with these beautiful companions that I never live long enough. So I'm going to read Kate and Coco's, and I think, Ken, you're going to do Kaori and Khan. We wanted to make sure we pronounced that correctly. So I'm going to start because, case is a little long. There's Coco.
There's Coco.
What a sweet pea. I want to start by thanking you, for your podcast and book. After losing my dog, Coco, unexpectedly in December, I was desperately seeking any resources that could help me process my grief. Hearing other stories and your insights has helped tremendously. Coco was the best surprise of my life. Like the Rolling Stones, oh yes, lyric, you can't always get what you want, so you get what you need. She taught me things and completed me in a way I didn't know I was searching for when I began the process of adopting a dog. I grew up with a beagle, so when I was ready to have my first dog as an adult, I naturally gravitated toward that breed. After seeing that a female beagle puppy was available for adoption at a local shelter, I submitted an application. The puppy was adopted by someone else during my approval process, but the shelter sent a photo of a 2 or 3 year old puggle to my heart, love pugs, they had just rescued from a kill shelter overflow in another state. It was love at first sight, and I asked if I could pick her up the next day. Coco took to her new name right away and always wanted to be by my side. The shelter had told me she didn't really like to play, but after a few days, she was bringing me the toys I had bought for her. She just needed a loving home for her personality to fully emerge. And from that point, playing multiple times a day was part of our daily routine. Just over a year after adopting Coco, I decided to go freelance full-time and work from home. Our bond grew even stronger as she was by my side all day, every day. Weekends were her favorite because it meant extra playtime and longer walks, but Coco did not like Mondays and would sometimes stay in bed after I got up. Not long after we brought her home, Coco had a seizure. Oh, those seizures. We spoke with a vet and learned some breeds were simply prone to them and opted for a prescription food that would help to minimize their frequency. It was my instinct to hold and comfort her whenever a seizure would start, but I never knew if I was helping or not. One afternoon, after a long day of unpacking in our new house, I was lying down on the sofa and Coco was in her favorite spot, curled up on the back couch cushions. Suddenly, she jumped down and nestled against me. A moment later, she started seizing. From then on, she continued to get my attention anytime she could feel one coming on so I could hold her and talk her through it. Coco was also extremely reactive to other dogs in the beginning. Even a dog on the other side of the street would set her off. Her face had some scarring, so it was easy to deduce her reactive behavior was a result of being attacked. Thankfully, I found a wonderful trainer who helped me to show Coco through body language that she was safe with me. We slowly worked our way up to interacting with mellow, non-reactive dogs, and I'm happy to report that in the last 2 years of Coco's life, she was able to make friends. I will never forget the first time she approached another dog wagging her tail and how my heart was bursting watching them sniff each other. That same trainer suggested I get a dog DNA test for Coco, which revealed that Coco's parents were a puggle and a chihuahua, which is a chihuahua dachshund, right?
Yeah.
My theory is that she and her siblings were oopsie babies and a breeder. She was the best of those four breeds and one of a kind. I loved her life together. Coco's name was always my first entry in my gratitude journal. She was part of every moment of my day and every plan for my life. And I thought we still had years together. But one day last October, Coco started limping and favoring her right front paw. The natural assumption was arthritis, but the vet thought it was a muscle strain and advised that we go easy on activity and see if it improved. And inexplicably, now that we know what it was, it did for a while. Coco loved the woods, so we hiked often and tried to get away to a cabin every fall. I had booked a place at the beginning of November with the intention of long walks in nature, but we were still within the timeline for minimizing pressure on her leg, so I brought a carrier sling with me. The way she looked down at the path, I could tell she was missing out on one of her favorite things, so I set her down and hoped that she would let me know when she needed a rest. If Coco felt pain while she romped around in the leaves and trotted happily ahead of us, she didn't show it. I am forever grateful that she had that experience one last time. The limp came back with a vengeance after Thanksgiving. This time the vet took x-rays, which revealed a mass in Coco's front right elbow. At that point, I thought the amputation the doctor was recommending was the worst case scenario. Of course, I would have done anything to prolong Coco's life, but my heart broke at the thought that her quality of life would be affected, that she may not be able to play or walk as much. While we waited for the radiology report to come back, I researched alternative therapies, hoping I could save her leg. In what seemed like a spot of good news, the report was not conclusive that it was cancerous, so we immediately submitted her urine for a blastomycosis test, the other potential cause for the mass. But we wouldn't know for a few days. That night, Coco started coughing. My initial concern was the respiratory illness that was spreading among dogs, and when we called the emergency vet, they advised we bring her in. There, they discovered fluid in her lungs and recommended we have more tests done at our animal hospital the next day. I was ready to do anything to save Coco. She was a fighter, and I believe with all my heart we could get through this. The vet at the animal hospital explained that both blasto and cancer could cause the symptoms Coco was experiencing. There was little she could do besides drain the fluid and send us home with painkillers while we waited for the test results. I understood that blasto could be just as damaging and fatal to dogs, but because there was treatment for it, it gave me a sliver of hope. If it was cancer and had spread to her lungs, we were told it would only be palliative care. It was the middle of Hanukkah, and I prayed for a miracle. But on Friday evening, I received the lab results from our vet. Coco had tested negative for blastomycosis, meaning by process of elimination, it was cancer after all. Even then, I was hoping for a few more weeks with her. Mentally, I was making a list of all of her favorite places, things, and foods, and all the ways I would spoil her. When Coco's limp had come back again, I'd ordered a dog stroller. The morning after her test came back, we packed it and Coco in the car and drove to the lakefront to go on one of her favorite walks. We pushed her in her stroller for hours that day. I could tell she loved being outside, and from time to time she looked back at us as if to say thank you. That just warms my heart. Our vet had told me a few things to look for that would indicate Coco was nearing the end. I noticed the windows between pain meds seemed to be shortening throughout Saturday. As I lay beside her in bed that night, I could feel and hear that her breathing was labored. I had the sinking feeling I was going to have to say goodbye much sooner than I ever wanted to, but I was determined that Coco would have a peaceful crossing at home. I did not want her to experience not being able to breathe and spend her last moments in a panicked rush to the emergency vet. After I gave her another dose of pain meds, I made sure she was comfortable on her pillow and slipped quietly out of the bedroom to cry. I didn't want Coco to see me sad. I wanted to be strong for her. When I returned, she was lying awake in my spot on the bed, pointed towards the door and waiting for me, just as she always would if I got up in the night. I gently shifted her back on her pillow and laid down beside her. After I rested my hand near her face so she could feel me near, she placed her paw on top. As always, so much was said between us without any words. The next morning, I called an at-home euthanasia service. They immediately put my mind at ease as they described the process. However, they did not have any availability until the next day, Monday. It meant we would be taking a risk that Coco could decline suddenly in the duration, but it also meant one last full day with her. We walked with her stroller, for hours again that day, soaking up every minute. That night, as we took our final walk around the neighborhood, we noticed that more dogs were in the windows of their houses than usual. It was as if they were sending Coco off. It was very difficult for me to know I was carrying Coco to bed for the very last time and downstairs the next morning. How many times had we repeated our routine? It felt so surreal that it was coming to an end. Everything I did, I kept thinking, this is the last, the last, the last. I think Coco knew too. We squeezed in one last trip to the park before the vet was scheduled to arrive at our home. For the first time in a few days, she wanted to get out of the stroller and walk. She took her time sniffing all the leaves on the ground and even got in a few last barks at other dogs. When the vet arrived, I kept my tone light and happy for Coco and told her a new friend was here. She did her usual investigation of an intruder and then sat quietly while the vet described what was about to happen. I called Coco into my lap, and she climbed up and didn't look back at the vet even when she touched Coco's leg. It reminded me of someone strapping into a car or plane seat for a journey. She was ready to cross over. Her ashes are on the mantle over the fireplace in a small box engraved with her name. Sometimes I look at it and I can't believe it holds her velvety ears, her round spotted belly, the face I love to kiss, the little legs that had a certain little trot, the mishmash of all the features she'd inherited from her unique background. It took a while for me to stop waiting for my life to go back to normal without her. For weeks, it was too painful to write in my gratitude journal. And then one day, I sat down to make a list just for Coco. I was grateful for the timing of everything that had brought her into my life. Grateful for the nearly 8 years I had with her. Grateful that we were able to have the most peaceful last few days with her and to say goodbye at home. Grateful she could keep breathing to the end and that the tumor did not cause her leg to break, a possibility the emergency vet had warned us could possibly happen. And grateful that she was put to sleep to take her out of her pain, not because she was an extra body in a shelter. I believe with all my heart that someday I will see her again. Until that day, I honor her by applying the lessons of grief and remembering what actually matters each day. Thank you again.
Well, such a beautiful story.
Amazing. Just thoughtful and so loving.
Much care and so much thoughtfulness given to the process of her dying and giving her all kinds of wonderful experiences toward the end. And what a wonderful relationship there Kate has described. It's really quite, it's quite a beautiful story. And even though she had cancer and was struggling with that, I kept thinking I was reviewing this story that it's a beautiful death. She gave her a really wonderful death.
And she even says that, right? She had gratitude for how she died. Yeah. She knew she had to die. She was dying. And that she did everything she could to make that happen for Coco.
Yeah. I mean, it's, we want to thank Kate. It's a beautiful story. Oh. It's sad. What a beautiful little dog Coco was. Very insanely cute.
A puggle.
I'm sure she'll be with us forever.
But I think it's really important that all of our stories are like this. It really tells you how important the human-animal bond is.
Yeah.
And how connected. You can't have a relationship with a human like you can with an animal. I'm sorry. It doesn't happen that way.
So let's share this comment from Cynthia. Thank you for the resources shared here on your channel. It's helping me with this loss. So we're so grateful that it's being helpful, Cynthia. So we'll move ahead and we will take a look at what Kaori sent us, which is quite a story as well. And so forever in our hearts, a story of love and loss with our Mastiff Khan. Meeting Khan. Khan's story begins months before his arrival on this earth, a time when my husband and I were residing in Japan. As a native of the country, I'd made a home there with my American husband, who was stationed for his work as a military contractor. We had married in Japan a couple of years prior and found contentment in each other's company. In early 2016, as my husband's contract neared its end, he expressed an unwavering desire to welcome a big dog into our lives, a giant dog akin to a horse in size, one that could serve as our guardian, confidant, and cherished family member. In May of that year, my husband returned to the U.S. while I awaited my visa. One day, he excitedly called to announce that we had acquired a puppy, a Mastiff puppy, to be exact. Yeah. Having never heard of Mastiffs before, I searched the breed on Google, accustomed to the charm of Labradors or Golden Retrievers with their endearing, cute faces. The images of adult Mastiffs that filled my screen did not align with my expectations. Furthermore, my husband had bestowed upon him the name Khan, inspired by the formidable Shere Khan from The Jungle Book. I couldn't shake the notion that this dog would exude a strong masculine presence, appealing to individuals who embody traditional masculine traits. And here is Khan.
Oh my goodness. Whoa.
Not at all intimidating looking. He's very cute.
He's very cute.
Fast forward to August 2016, and there's Kaori with a big smile on her face.
Yeah, right.
Fast forward to August 2016, and I relocated to the States, finally meeting Khan in person. At just 5 months old, he already possessed the stature of a medium-sized dog. He didn't fit the mold of the typical adorable fluffy puppy I'd imagine. However, the moment our eyes locked, his endearing personality won me over completely. It was then I realized I was meant to be his mommy. They sent a series of pictures, and I'm trying to make sure I show them in order.
Look at that tongue. Oh my goodness. I love that tongue.
My husband and I may not have had children together, but with Khan in our lives, I never felt like I was missing out on anything. He became my son in every sense of the word. While others experienced profound changes upon welcoming a baby into the family, my life underwent a transformation the moment Khan entered it. Our little family of three became my world. Khan's towering stature often sparked curiosity wherever we ventured, whether at the dog park in our neighborhood or simply waiting at traffic lights. Strangers couldn't help but ask, "What kind of dog is that?" Despite initial intimidation caused by his size, Khan's gentle demeanor never failed to win over hearts. His innate friendliness and lack of aggression reassured everyone who crossed his path. His capacity for love knew no bounds, a trait that made him a cherished member of our family and circle of friends. In the quieter moments, Khan's unique quirks brought laughter and joy. His drooling, farting, and snoring became a symphony of familiar sounds that defined our shared space. The sight of earwax flying during an enthusiastic shake added a touch of humor to our daily lives, making Khan's presence irreplaceable. I did everything for Khan, from feeding him and taking him for walks to driving around with him to attending obedience classes. Our days were filled with shared adventures. I even grew vegetables in the garden because he enjoyed fresh greens and planted blueberry trees because he had a fondness for blueberries. When my work commitments kept me away from home, I made sure he was well cared for at daycare. I devoutly managed his personal Instagram page, capturing memories through photographs and videos that filled my phone storage to the brim. Every decision I made, every effort was driven by my love and dedication to Khan. Whether it was taking time off from work to celebrate his birthdays, buying a spacious SUV, or moving from an apartment to a house with a fenced yard for him to play freely, Khan was always at the forefront of my mind. In essence, my life revolved around him, and I wouldn't have had it any other way. Here's another picture of the
Oh, look at
this. This is her husband with Khan in the back of the car.
Yeah, he's as big as her husband.
And then, again, here's her husband having a conversation.
Conversation, right.
Deployment and new beginnings. Between 2017 and 2018, my husband embarked on another deployment to Japan, leaving me and Khan to navigate life as a duo for over a year. As a 36-year-old transplant to the U.S., separated from my friends and family back in Japan, Khan became my steadfast companion. His unwavering presence dispelled any sense of loneliness, and his protective nature eased any fears I harbored about living in a foreign land. Together, we frequented the local dog park, forging connections with fellow pet owners and forming bonds through Khan's undeniable charm. Upon my husband's return, our family welcomed a new addition, Kuma, a Mastiff puppy and Khan's biological niece. With Khan, Kuma, my husband, and myself, our household felt complete. While I had once dreamed of raising human children, the presence of our furry son and daughter filled our lives with boundless joy. Aware of the shorter lifespan of giant breeds, particularly one as massive as Khan, I harbored hopes for his longevity. With his weight peaking at 187 pounds during his prime, wow, I yearned for Khan to accompany us for at least a decade, ideally surpassing 13 years. Yet the uncertainty of time lingered, a reminder to cherish each moment spent with our beloved companion. And here is the addition of Puma.
So cute. Oh my goodness. So cute.
Facing the inevitable on October 26, 2023, rather, returning home from work, I found Khan exhibiting unusual symptoms, excessive breathing, drooling, and signs of nausea. I called a vet hotline and received a diagnosis of upset GI because of kefir I gave him and was advised to monitor him overnight. Thankfully, he appeared normal the next morning. However, the following day, he began limping. I took him to the vet on November 14th. The vet initially diagnosed with soft tissue trauma and suspected arthritis in his back leg. After a few weeks, Khan's limping persisted despite prescribed medication. In addition to his limping, he started developing multiple bumps on his head and under his chin. On December 14th, our vet did an x-ray, finding no structural issues with his bones, and referred us to a surgeon at Blue Pearl. Despite my desire for an immediate assessment, scheduling constraints due to the holiday season pushed the earliest appointment to December 21st. Finally, on the appointed day, I accompanied Khan to the surgeon, awaiting a diagnosis of arthritis as the worst-case scenario. Observing Khan's gait, which had worsened in the days leading up to the appointment, conducting a thorough examination, the surgeon delivered devastating news. Khan had cancer in his left leg, likely osteosarcoma. With a prognosis of only a couple of months without treatment, the surgeon recommended amputation if the cancer was localized. Overwhelmed by grief, I struggled to comprehend that Khan, at the age of 7, faced a life-threatening illness, far from the 13 years we had hoped for. Rapid decline and difficult decisions. After the Christmas holiday, we returned to the surgeon for an x-ray and biopsy. By then, Khan's condition had worsened. He constantly dragged his front left paw, avoiding putting any weight on it, while lumps appeared all over his body, including his paws. Despite his pain, his appetite remained unaffected, but he struggled to move, making it difficult to go to the bathroom. Following the new year, the biopsy results revealed a diagnosis of cancer with an unknown origin, suspected to be a tumor on the joint of Khan's front left leg. Consulting with an oncologist on January 9th, 2024, we discussed treatment options. Excuse me, the oncologist recommended starting with broad spectrum oral chemotherapy, followed by amputation. She emphasized the need to alleviate Khan's severe pain, suggesting amputation as a definitive solution. Excuse me. As Khan's health continued to decline, we proceeded with the first round of oral chemotherapy on January 11th. Returning home, I helped him get off the car and he walked to the front yard to go potty. After he peed, he lost balance and fell hard, unable to move forward. My husband lifted him up and took him inside the house to his bed. We were concerned about his deteriorating condition, and the following morning we discovered a dislocated joint on his back left leg. He managed to go outside to go potty by himself. After peeing, he lay down on the pine needles, refusing to move. My husband went outside to check on him, came back very upset, saying, "This isn't Khan, he wouldn't even wag his tail." We called the vet asking for advice. They asked if we could bring him to the vet to examine the dislocated leg. We realized Khan was dying and taking another trip to the vet would put too much stress and discomfort on him. We grappled with the decision to euthanize him on Monday. We moved him to the basement so he could go to the backyard to go to the bathroom without using steps. I put a twin-size bed next to his own so he could be close. We spent the final weekend together in the basement. We had pajama parties and movie nights. Even whipped up some frozen yogurt treats together. Sunday arrived and a spark of hope flickered. Khan seemed stronger. His playful spirit flickered back for a brief moment. I persuaded my husband to postpone the euthanasia appointment until next Monday, and he agreed. A wave of joy washed over me. I had another precious week with Khan. I washed his bed, cleaned the basement, mowed the backyard, and cooked his food to prepare for the next week. I was just happy he was still alive and by our side. But by Tuesday night, the reality of his condition hit us hard. Fluid gathered in his abdomen and a deep agonizing pain clouded his eyes. It wasn't a spoken word, but a whimper, a heavy sigh, a look of utter exhaustion. Khan was telling us he was ready. I called my husband and together, surrounded by love and the warmth of family, we made the impossible decision. Tomorrow we would say goodbye. Let me show this. Let's see. Oh, here's a picture.
So sweet.
Let's see. Saying goodbye, the morning of January 17th arrived, a day etched forever in my memory. Khan, despite the pain that had ravaged him, enjoyed his last breakfast of his favorite homemade food. Seeing him peacefully slumber on my bed after a restless night filled me with bittersweet relief. My husband got off work early, and together we transferred Khan to my car for the short journey to the vet. Khan remained remarkably calm throughout, his usual boisterousness replaced by a quiet contentment. The vet's office, a place once filled with playful puppy checkups, now held a different kind of significance. The warmth of the familiar couple who owned the vet and who lovingly claimed themselves as Khan's grandparents since day one offered a flicker of comfort. As Khan lay on the table, surrounded by everyone who loved him, a sense of serenity washed over him. With the first injection, his eyes fluttered closed, sleep finally calming him after nights of struggle. He was snoring so loud, just like his usual self. We surrounded him, crying, whispering our love and gratitude for the immense joy he'd brought into our lives. With the second injection, a search for a vein, providing momentary harrowing, finally brought a peaceful end to his suffering. It was swift, almost like a sigh of relief. His chest rose and fell one last time, the air leaving his lungs with a soft whoosh. In that stillness, Khan, our boy, was gone. When I saw his face, my tears stopped flowing. He looked like he was sleeping very peacefully, no more pain. So here's at the vet's.
Mm-hmm.
And then I believe this is here just after he's passed. Mm-hmm. Living with loss, it's been nearly 2 months since he passed. I find myself questioning some of the choices I made for his care. We always question. Did feeding him only kibble until he was five, annual vaccinations, and his monthly heartworm and flea tick prevention contribute to his cancer? After some research, I've learned that these are significant risk factors. If I cooked him fresh homemade food, used alternative preventatives, and minimized vaccinations, could I have prevented cancer? Could Khan have lived longer if I made different choices? Despite the regrets, there's still so much to be grateful for in Khan's life. He came straight from a loving breeder, designer Mastiff Kennel, who adored him. Unlike many dogs, he never knew the uncertainty of shelters or abandonment. He had both human parents and a cherished sister who looked up to him. The vet clinic became a welcoming haven with staff who affectionately called themselves Khan's grandparents. Thankfully, he bypassed the common health issues of his breed, living a vibrant life free of pain until the cancer struck. These last 2 weeks were undeniably difficult, but even then he was spared the grief of losing a loved one, a sorrow his sister Kuma now carried. Khan's life was a symphony of pure, unadulterated joy. We, in turn, were his safe harbor, a constant source of love and warmth. He knew without a doubt the depth of our devotion, and his heart overflowed with the same love in return. We were lucky to have a dog like Khan. He was my husband's dream dog. He was a true gentle giant. We enjoyed almost 8 years of a happy life with him, and we would choose to have Khan again and again, even if we knew we'd only get 8 years with him. Mommy and Daddy love you forever. Thank you for coming into our lives, loving us unconditionally. We miss you dearly. Until we see you again, we'll never stop missing you. Got a couple more. Here's a photo of Khan dancing.
God, so good.
And here's another picture of Khan with her husband.
You know, these two stories are similar. They both had to do with cancer in a leg.
Yep.
Oh, that's beautiful.
Oh,
look at that's so beautiful, those pictures. And they both had such gratitude for the relationships.
For the relationship and it takes a while to get there for most of us, right? I mean, it's,
yeah.
But they really,
they both embrace that.
Yeah, they were able to feel that.
Beautiful stories. Really so beautiful. Sad, but beautiful stories.
So we want to thank Kaori and Kate for sharing. And the pictures are great, too.
Yeah.
The pictures are so revealing of the kind of connection and the kind of love for the our animal companions that we have.
Lovely.
So we want to just remind you, too, if you can, please do subscribe on YouTube, because it helps to raise the visibility of the program and get it into the viewing by other people who would benefit from the content. So, and thanks as always for being with us and for sharing your stories. And please do send us your stories as well. Great seeing you, Nancy, as always.
As always, Ken.
Take care.